certainty that a person has to believe and go on.
Yeah.
And perhaps if the people who were listening to those sikhs would have talked and believed it 100%, then they would have been fulfilled already. But
maybe it was. You don't realize it. Because you can't see it doesn't mean it didn't happen.
See, that's his other perspective.
I've heard that said, but it doesn't mean anything for all practical purposes,
what does it mean?
I'm not saying that's his, I'm just saying.
I've heard that said, that maybe it happened, that everyone's alive, that all the old people that were around with whatever first...
You just can't see
it. Right, like
are really alive, right. Nothing happened, and you can't tell.
It depends
to
on...
Me, to me, that's gibberish.
I mean, no, I don't see that way. At all. I think what you're saying is gibberish.
What's the practical implications of what you're saying?
But then I have no premise.
Just like when the Rebbe said to the chassid, they came in and he asked him about going to the kever, what he called kever, by sukkahs. He said, I'm not going to be here, I'm going to be in sukkahs, I'm leaving right after Simchas Torah. So, and it says in Shulchan Aruch, you can't go during Chol HaMoed. So the Rebbe said, how you look at it? If you look at the Tefillin, the Rebbe is dead. You can't go, and so what are you going? He said, if you look at it like me, you can go and I can go. Because I don't hold it that heavy as that.
Excuse me. In the Maima Basi Lagani, Tafshin Yod Aleph, the Rebbe talks about, and the Rebbe cried like a baby,
right.
Okay? And the Rebbe talks about, after everything we went through, there still had to be the union of a Stalkus of Tzaddikim. One second. And there's a whole section of the Maima that deals on what a Stalkus of Tzaddikim means, and what the significance of a Stalkus of Tzaddikim is, and the Rebbe, and that is not something that the Rebbe tried in any way to diminish, that the Rebbe tried to in any way pretend is not painful, that the Rebbe tried in any way to pretend,
right.
The Rebbe said it's worse than the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Don't make it like, oh, he's alive. It's terrible, it's horrible, it's awful, it's worse than the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. However, Hasidim, who have the capacity to look beyond the chitzenis of things, they're able to see the penurious of things. So to them, istalkus means in the same moment where he says that it's worse than the destruction of Beis HaMikdash, he says istalik doesn't mean he went away. Istalik means that now he's revealed in a greater way in an oven of silah. Okay, fine. So Hasidim are able to take a day which commemorates something which is worse than the destruction of Beis HaMikdash and celebrate it. It doesn't mean that Hasidim are out of touch with reality and don't know that it's worse than the destruction of Beis HaMikdash. They know that it's worse than the destruction of Beis HaMikdash. However, again, since by these tzaddikim who through their teachings they revealed the panemius, and therefore through being connected to them we're able to access the panemius much more, and especially through the day that their astalkas were able to access the panemius of their teachings even more, like Rav Shimon Yochai on the day of his astalkas was megala the secrets of the secrets of. So because of that, we're able to celebrate something which on the one hand we know is worse than the destruction of Beis HaMikdash. And on the other hand, we're able to celebrate it as and look at the tremendous positive revelation of the true divine reality as it's expressed on this day. But it does not mean that we deny the reality. The reality is that we went through that Yud Shvat, the Rebbe said, is worse than the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. That's a fact.
So that, it's a halacha on Shulchan Aruch. The fact you can't go there during Chol HaMoed, so you shouldn't go to the right?
That's a fact that's not just the halacha on Shulchan Aruch. That's not the halacha for those people who relate to him that way. For the Rebbe says, I relate to it this way. I'm putting it in the mind because I relate to it this way. It's worse than the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. That's how I relate to it. Okay?
I'm putting it into the mind
that that's how you should relate. And yet, at the same time, Hasidim look at the destruction of Beis HaMikdash differently than everyone else looks at the destruction of Beis HaMikdash. And Hasidim looks at the status of something which is worse than the destruction of Beis HaMikdash differently. But so, in other words, so how we relate to the Rebbe, how we relate to the Friedrich Rebbe, doesn't diminish in any way the fact that what we saw is worse than the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Rebbe never says, the Rebbe never encourages us to deny what our eyes saw. The Rebbe just says that we could relate to what our eyes saw, which is the chitzenius of reality, or we could relate to the panemius reality. So the Rebbe says that's already a kayak that Chassidus, that panemius atera gives us, that we can relate to the panemius reality to such a degree that it actually affects our hog of a pile, that we take the same days and we celebrate them as holidays. Okay? Now, but again, that's not denying the chitzenius reality, and that this chitzenius reality is something which is only temporary. It's something which is not ultimately supposed to stay this way. But again, the pneumius, everything is good and everything is perfect and everything is wonderful and there is no bad and there is no... And Hasidim, by learning Hasidim to connect to pneumius, they have the capacity to relate to things that way. But we're not supposed to accept the negative packaging. The fact is that from our perspective, okay, from Rav Shimon bar Yochai's perspective, there was never a destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, from Rav Shimon bar Yochai's perspective, the Beis HaMikdash was never destroyed. But from our perspective, we experience a lack of the revelation of godliness in the world. From our perspective, we experience the lack of the revelation of the Rebbe in the world of after Yud Shvat. So therefore, the Rebbe says, from our perspective, it's worse than the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So they're both true.
The answer to the question is, it's up to you how you see it, whether you can go or
but
not.
But again, you can't take away what happened. The Rebbe never set to question what happened.
Right. Yeah, but are okay.
So now, when I'm telling you that the Rebbe says in the Sira that he's certain that every person in this room will be here and will still be around to greet Mashiach Tzidkenu, not just the young people here are going to live till that time, but even the old people that are saying, the Rebbe said this upstairs in the room in Tavshin Yud Aleph. I'm certain 100, they're not just the young people, but also the old people sitting here are going to be around to greet Mashiach Tzidkenu and go to Israel in the town. It didn't happen.
Wait a minute. Aren't we comparing apples to oranges? Because you're saying that the Rebbe, in some sense, acknowledged that there was a stalkus by the Friedrich Rebbe, right?
Right.
You're saying in some sense, right? But what happens if we compare that statement that you just mentioned about everyone being alive still, right?
Right.
To the Rebbe's Metzius. The Rebbe would say...
I want to answer your question.
The Rebbe would say there was no histalkus.
I want to answer your question.
And we believe the Rebbe is here.
A lady puts out miracles.
Why not believe these people are here too?
A lady puts out miracles.
Yeah.
She has a dream that the Rebbe comes. She feels that she wants a bracha from the Rebbe, and she feels it's not the same... Like when the Rebbe was alive, she can get a dollar, she can get this. So she goes to sleep that night, but she has a dream where the Rebbe comes and tells her 201. So she realizes that's some kind of page number, she has which volume, and it tells her which volume in the Igros, and she wakes up, she goes to the volume, she opens and she looks, 201, it's on. Anyway, she finds that it's a page of Ha'aris that the Rebbe writes to someone on a sefer. And she looks at the thing, somehow the Rebbe said, look, to remember a certain number. She looks at that number, and the only number that it appears is on a certain line, which sends you to Tanya Geras HaKedosh, Perek Chav Zayin, which says that Tzadik HaDespata, Mishtakich B'Kulu Alman Yatur B'Chayu. She was also brachan that she's not getting a direct brachan from the Rebbe himself, she's only getting through the Igros. The Rebbe came to her in a dream and sent her to a place where to look up a certain maramak, and where that maramak sends you to the thing that says that the tzaddik who passes away is in the world more than in his life.
The Rebbe says it doesn't apply to the Nasi Yadur.
One second. That is a question. Okay. That is a question. So the Rebbe came to this woman in a dream and he stared her wrong. The Rebbe came to this woman in a dream, he stared her wrong.
Why?
He sent her to a chazal, which is something. She's complaining that she wants the bracha from the Rebbe himself, and not just through the Igros, that she feels like you know. So the Rebbe sends her to go look up the thing that says that a tzaddik who passes away is in the world more than his life. She sent her to the wrong place. She sent her to the Sikha Pashas Pa'i, or the just Sikha, or other Sikha, which everyone's quoting, which says that, which based on that, people are saying that there's no stop. So it should say, it's again from the Rebbe himself. Why is he staring at the Tzaddik HaDespata? It's a disinformation campaign. Being waged from the other side of the other side of the wall of consciousness. I mean, why is the, you know, and not that it was something she couldn't make up herself. I don't remember exactly how it worked. She put it out. It's a number with a page, with a volume, and she had to go, you don't know Ingrid Balpez, she's a simple lady. Had to go find the volume and the page and the number and whatever it is that sent to it was sent to that.
So how can you say if the Rebbe is a nubby, and if a nubby, anything he says that's good it has to come true, and if he said that all these people
what was the point of
let's just add one little key phrase to that statement. Anything that a nubby says as a nevuah in the name of God.
What was the point of that last story that you just told? what's the point?
So the point is like this. In my humble opinion, maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I'm not, or maybe you don't want to stone me, it's not the party line. Go right ahead, feel free. The fact is like this. That there's two ways of going through a certain process. One way of going through a certain process, like for instance, a person can get thrown into jail. That person's thrown into jail. It's a very frightening, painful experience. His freedom is lost, and it's devastating, and he's cut off from his family. There's another person who's going to prison, but he has the key to the cell in his pocket. But he has a reason why he wants to go into prison. He has a plan, he has something in mind by going into prison. He has some other program that he wants to accomplish. He goes to prison, but he has the key to the cell in his pocket. Now, no one else knows that, right? His family is crying, his friends are crying, everyone's running, oh, he's in prison. He's in his pocket, he's not in prison. He's not a prisoner.
Okay.
He happened to decide to go into prison. But the whole experience of prison is not, it's not, that's not part of, he's not in any way bound by the experience of prison. The people around him, whatever his program is, whatever he wants to accomplish, wants people to think that he's in prison. For everyone else, it could be just as painful. To them, they don't know that he's not in prison. To them, they think he's in prison. So from that perspective, it's the exact same thing. To him, it's nothing. He has the key in his pocket. It's a joke. It's nothing at all. Anyone can go into a prison cell voluntarily with a key in his pocket. And he doesn't feel in any way imprisoned, or he's not in any way limited or imprisoned by the experience. So it's in no way a limiting experience. It's just only, in fact, if anything, he's using the experience. The experience is not limiting him. When the Rebbe came along and the Rebbe said that in the previous generation there was a stroke and there was a stalkus, there was a loss of the power of speech, and there was a stalkus, which again, we're jumping the gun because it's only in two more parshas that we're going to be learning it inside. But it came up now, so we'll mention it now. When the Rebbe says that in the previous generation there was, the reason why there was a stroke and a stalkus was because even though the Nasi himself was on the level of experiencing the revelation of Geula, but the world wasn't a keli for it, so he couldn't bring it down to the world. So since he couldn't bring it down to the world, so therefore, the only way he could impact on the world was in a way of a stalkus, in a way of kind of impacting the world in a way that it's not bringing it to the world, but not in a way that the world could take it in a premium at a conscious level, but in a manner of siluk, of raimimus. Okay, so that's it. You couldn't bring it down to this world. The Rebbe says, in this generation, that's not a problem. The Rebbe says, in just this generation, that's not a problem. And this generation goes straight to the Gula, the Shamas for Gula. Fine. Now, I want to ask the question. That's Gimel Shvat. A month and a half later, the Rebbe has a stroke. After the Rebbe said that in this generation, there's no immune. And again, according to all signs and senses, the Rebbe's capacity for speech was limited. Not only that, the Friedrich Rebbe after his stroke, there were people who could understand him. The Rebbe, nobody could understand. There were a handful of words that the Rebbe said that anyone could understand, including yes and no. After that, it was all. Now, Abhidharatava people saw all the classical signs of a person whose speech is limited and is extremely frustrated by it. That's what everybody saw publicly. Okay, now. So the thing is like this. So what's the difference? The Rebbe said that by the Friedrich Rebbe, there had to be such a thing because the world wasn't the king. So, but like by Moshe Rabbeinu, he had also signs. Because he couldn't communicate what his experience, he couldn't communicate down to the world.
The world wasn't the keli for what?
though.
You said that, that the Critical Rebbe had to do this because the world was not a Kaili.
The world could not receive the revelation of Geula as the Friedrich Rebbe experienced it on his level. He couldn't bring it down to the world. So therefore, he related to the world in a way, being removed from it. First he became removed from the world in terms of communicating with the world, then he became removed from the world in terms of this Dalkus. The Rebbe says, this generation is not a problem. Everything is here, everything is ready, everything is coming brought down into the lowest levels, everything is communicated with speech, everything. So what happened? So again, the fact is like this, that even though we said on all the earlier Rebbeim that all of the experiences they went through were with their haskama, and therefore it's similar to the person going into prison with the key in his pocket, but it still wasn't 100% that way. There was still a certain objective hint, obstacle which prevented them from accomplishing what they were trying to accomplish without going through that process. So by the Alter Rebbe, he could have avoided going to prison by making his hand across his forehead. He could have avoided going to prison by the Chetan Chassidim coming and burning down Petterburg with their Aveda, and he could have avoided. But he wouldn't have accomplished what he wanted to accomplish. In order for him to accomplish what he wanted to accomplish, he was stuck. He had to go through Petterburg. He had to go through the 53 days of pain and suffering of a citizen. He had to actually go through the experience. And by going through the experience, he accomplished what he wanted to accomplish, which was the Amshach of Pnimis HaTeir, the Naifin of Yafutsu, and Yad Chassidim Al Elyona, whatever he wanted to accomplish with the 53 days of being locked up in Petterburg. So even though on one hand we say it was like he was in prison with the key in his pocket, but it would be a better mashal would be that even though he had the key in his pocket, he threw the key away. Because in order to accomplish the inyan of what he wanted to accomplish with those 53 days, he couldn't use the key. So in a sense, he couldn't really use the key. So on one hand we say that you know, no prison could really imprison the Alter Rebbe. Objectively, the Alter Rebbe is above any prison experience. But on the other hand, subjectively, he did go through it. Why? Because he had to. In order to bring down into the world what he wanted to bring down into the world, he had to go through it. He had no choice. Take the Friedrich Rebbe. The Friedrich Rebbe, we say, anything that happens to a tzaddik happens with his own haskama, and there's nothing that can truly limit the tzaddik, because that's all fine and well, but the fact is that the Friedrich Rebbe was laboring on the one objective limitation, which is that the world wasn't a Kaili. And since the world wasn't a Kaili, he had, in a sense, no choice but to remove himself from the scene. To progressively, progressive degrees of removing himself from the scene, because the world wasn't a Kaili. Again, is he, by definition, limited by strokes? Is he limited by strokes? No. And therefore, if you relate to him after Yud Shvat, like he's here and he's Begashmius and he's there, that's all fine, because by definition he's not limited by that experience because he has the key in his pocket. But at the same time, there is some objective thing which forces him to go through that experience. On one level, he has to go through that experience. Why? Because the world isn't ready. The world isn't ready for him to take the key out of his pocket. Even though he has the key in his pocket, he can't use it because the world isn't ready for him to use it. When the Rebbe says the non-generation, that is not the problem. What the Rebbe is saying is like this, that in our generation, the difference is that it's totally voluntary. In our generation, the situation is it's totally voluntary, and it's not an act of cutting himself off from this world in order to allow the next Rebbe who could bring it down lower. That's not what's going on. By the way, when the Friedrich Rebbe removes himself more and more from the world, it's in order to create the space for the next Rebbe to bring it down. What he can't bring down, he has to move aside to create that space for the Rebbe to come along and bring it down. The Rebbe says, I'm not here to create a space because the world isn't a Kaili, because I can't do it, because I can't take the key out of my palm, because I can't, there's something holding me back. The Rebbe can't announce, you should know objectively there's nothing holding it back. objectively, there's nothing holding it back. There's nothing. There's no need for stroke. There's no need for stalkers. There's no need for. There's nothing. There is no objective. There is nothing. That there is nothing going on out there in the divine cheshbon of the process of Geula that forces me to do.
That makes it totally arbitrary, though.
Why arbitrary?
Because if he doesn't,
makes it totally voluntary.
But there,
it's not arbitrary. It's very purposeful.
There's nothing that
it's very purposeful
has to be accomplished.
Sure, there is.
Doesn't have sure to be. You're saying it doesn't have
it
to.
Doesn't
be.
Have to be. The Rebbe wants it to be. In other words, what does the Rebbe want to be a gemara?
You think it's extra?
What does the Rebbe want to be a gemara?
The wish you want.
The Rebbe wants one thing to be a gemara. But before we get to what the Rebbe wants to be a gemara, so the Rebbe is saying anything that I go through from here on in. It doesn't mean I didn't go through it. Don't pretend that it's not happening. It's happening. When people came to the Rebbe and said, you know, should we say Tehillim for the Refuah? Should we learn the Geras Hatshuva for the Refuah? Should we add the Kapitlach of the early Rabbein for the Refuah? Should we add the Shrub? The Rebbe gave us to do all these different things. But it should be a Refuah Kreva, Rebbe Shira Vizimra. Certainly, the Rebbe gave that thing that you should do things that there should be a Refuah. It's just an illusion. The Rebbe didn't answer, no, don't do it, it's just an illusion, do it for other reasons. That's it. The difference here is not that the Rebbe doesn't go through these things, but the Rebbe's going through these things are totally voluntary. In other words, he has the key in his pocket at all times. So therefore, he's in and he's out at the same time. He could be in the prison cell, but he's not in prison. Now, the Rebbe was in the prison cell and he was in prison. Why? Because in order to accomplish your futsu minus echachutz, he had to be in prison. So he, even though he had the key in his pocket, he had to commit himself to not use it. Because in order to accomplish your futsu minus echachutz, he had to be in prison. It wasn't enough to just sit in prison.
So we're saying the Rebbe could have taken himself out of whatever matzav he was in, he
right.
didn't want to.
No question. Right.
So why was the Rebbe doing that?
Right. So it's a very interesting thing. The Yalkut Shemeni that describes, the Yalkut Shemeni right after, that talks right after the revelation of, talks right after Mashiach standing on the roof of the Beis HaMikdash and saying, you know, the war between these two superpowers and the Arabs and the superpower, and when Mashiach stands up and says, humble ones, the time of your redemption has arrived. Okay, that whole scene. The next one talks about the suffering of Mashiach. The next Yalkut Shemeni talks about the suffering that Mashiach goes through. And it says there that God offers him, I'll stop it. Tell me when to stop. That's what it describes. It says God, he agrees to go through the suffering, and God says, to tell me anytime you want, I'll stop. That's what God says to Mashiach. And he tell me when to stop. And Mashiach says, one second, Mashiach says, but I want to save those who were born, those who were unborn, those who might have been born. I want to save everybody. So don't stop. That's the description as it's brought in the Yalkut Shemeni. Describes the suffering, and it says that Mashiach volunteers. That he says, let me know when. It's up to you. Let me know when to stop.
So how is that different from the case of the Alter Rebbe, who also, what you said, could have gone out, but then he wouldn't have accomplished the thing that he wanted.
There you go.
What?
That answers your own question. If he would have gone out, he wouldn't have accomplished. But you're saying he doesn't have to do this to accomplish.
So the Rebbe wants it.
You're saying like the Rebbe is accomplishing a shleimus that's like beyond.
So I'm saying, so what's the idea? So what's the idea? On the one hand, the Rebbe says that it's not necessary. It doesn't have to go through any of this in order to bring the Geula down into the world. The point is not, in other words, just two issues here. Just bring the Geula down into the world, which is something that the Rebbe says that he can accomplish and he has already accomplished. The problem is, that the thing here is that on the subjective level, in other words, in terms of the objective job of bringing the Geula down into the world, that is something that only the Rebbe could accomplish, and the Rebbe says in many ways, he has accomplished the Rebbe. The point here is the subjective experience of the reality of Geula. Who gets included in that? So now this is a purely voluntary thing on the part of Mashiach, who he wants to include in the Geula. So it's up to him who he wants to include in the Gula. That seems to be the thrust of that Yalkut Shemayim. What does it mean, who he wants to include into the Gula, including more and more people into the Gula? What does it mean, including more people? Including more people into the Gula means that, you know, it's from the way, at least from the thrust of the Sikhs that the Rebbe is talking to us, including more people in the Gula seems to be the idea of that more and more people should be, from a subjective standpoint, ready for the Gula. Objectively, there is nothing holding back the Gula from coming. People, you know, just based on all the suffering that the Jewish people have gone through and all the tshuva that they did and all everything, there's nothing holding back. There's no reason why the Gula shouldn't come to the entire Jewish people. However, for most people, it will be an overwhelming experience, a totally makiftik experience, rather than a pneumistic experience. It will be a totally, for most people, it will be a totally makiftik experience because they have not prepared themselves for it. So it will be totally shatter their reality as they used to living it. It will be a total departure from anything that they used to and the way they used to living and the way they... So again, objectively, the Jewish people deserve it. The Jewish people have the right to it. The Jewish people should demand it. The Jewish people as a whole, as the world as a whole is ready for it, no question about it. And therefore, and not only that, For the world as a whole, it's here. On the individual subjective experiential level, the Rebbe says, I want that more and more people should be ready for it. Should be ready, lekavo p'nei m'shus. That's what I want. I want, again, the Rebbe says, even the achana is already done. The achana, in terms of the objective standards of preparation, have already been accomplished. Now we're talking about something else. We're talking about a subjective preparation. On the personal level, the same that the Rebbe says in Mashal, the Sikha Parshas Neach, the Rebbe says, tshuva for Klal Yisrael as a whole has already been done, for the world as a whole it's already been done. Now anybody who has to do tshuva, has to do tshuva for himself on a personal level. Okay? What the Rebbe is doing is creating the space for people to do that personal tshuva and that personal preparation on a personal level. That not only Klal Yisrael as a whole should be ready, the world as a whole should be ready, right, but the individuals should be ready. That it should dafka come from individuals. And if you look at the whole sikha of Chav Ches Nissen, the Rebbe came along to emphasize individuals. And the next sikha, the Rebbe sikha of Parsha Shmini, the Rebbe spoke about the care of each individual. And it's already started in the sikha of Purim Tav Shemem Zayin, where the Rebbe spoke about that it went over from the Nasi to each individual. The whole emphasis here is that the Rebbe is creating a geula in which the individuals are ready for geula. As individuals.
How are the individuals supposed to, how is he creating the space for individuals to be ready?
The way you create the space for individuals to relate to Geula is that the way you create this space for individuals to be prepare themselves for Geula is when you step off the scene. When the Rebbe comes along, in other words, there were a lot of people, just to give a mashal, there were a lot of people who their whole ruchnis for a whole week was the Rebbe's Fabrangan on Shabbos afternoon. That was their ruchnis for a whole week. I did everybody if I bring the scream, learn, daven, learn, make time, make learn, add and learning, increase in learning, listen learning. It went right over their heads. They flew on the Shabbos afternoon forever.
You know, that was it. That they didn't learn. So,
I mean. No, they didn't have to. They were flying on the Shabbos afternoon for bringing. They were flying, they felt chassidus, whatever they wanted. They were flying. They flew on the Shabbos afternoon for Fabrang. So even though the Fabrang would ever say, do, learn, work, make time, do, learn, daven, but he was like this, wow, it's blown away. It flew.
You can't say most people didn't learn that were in that room.
Many people did not take what the Rebbe was giving them at Fabrang's and bring it down into Kehla. They flew around for a week until the next week came along. But they flew around, some flew for one day, some flew for 2 days, some flew for 3 days, some flew. Each one, whatever they took from the Fabrengen and how long they flew.
So you internalize it.
That was it. And then they came back the next week to fly again. But there was no, but it was so powerful, it was so intense, it was so much that not only people didn't take it home and try to live with it, and that's what they know what he said. And that wasn't even so important. What did he say? It was the experience. Wow, boom, man, it was the Fabrengen. Very powerful, it was amazing. Not only that, sometimes when you sat down afterwards for the Chazara to hear what he said, it took the edge off the experience. The experience was like, wow, man. Like walking at home, you know, sitting down, oh, did he say this, did he say that? And how did that connect to this and this connect to that? And Chazara, like, you know, you kind of lost it. It was just extracting the thrill, just sitting there, wow, and then it was like bombing away for a couple of hours.
Like, that's like
wasn't even so important what he said.
It's like to describe a teacher that doesn't know how to reach
his students. Now he doesn't know how to reach his students. Now he doesn't know how to reach the students. It's the students enjoy watching the teacher in action so much that they don't bother listening to what he has to say.
Message.
He knows exactly how to reach the students. He knows how to bring every idea down to the level of the students. That's not the problem. The problem is not that it's a limitation of the teacher. The Rebbe said that was the problem with the previous generation. It was too high. You couldn't come down. The Rebbe says that this generation, the most difficult concepts of Chassidus are brought down into easy sikhs that everyone could read, learn, and understand. That's not the problem. The problem is that people were relating to the Rebbe, to the Malchus. People were relating more to the Makifim than to the Pnimis. And they didn't bother taking what the Rebbe was offering. So what happened was people were, the Rebbe was offering you a Pnimius in a way that was never experienced before, to bring down into the sechel of a grubber, young, a guy who spent the first 35 years of his life eating McDonald's, and as grub as you can get. And the Rebbe brought it down to the sechel of sechel, and the Rebbe said, you can explain these things to a guy. Okay, the Rebbe took the highest and honorable sentence and brought it down. Any yolk could understand. If he bothers, if he puts in the effort, it's not going to have, he's not going to lie to you on a couch and it's going to go into his brain and then play it on a tape recorder while you're sleeping, it's going to go into your head. You got to lie to it, you got to put in the work, you got to put in the effort. But it's there, it's available, anyone can do it.
They say the sikhs of knowledge and base are very difficult sikhs.
They're not difficult. They're difficult. You know, if there's any difficulty to them, they're difficult in the sense that they're based on the fact that you were supposed to be learning sikhs for 40 years. Instead of sleeping for 40 years, they're waking up in an olive and a base. That's why it might seem difficult if you didn't do all the sikhs up until then. They're not difficult per se. If you have a sense of the sikhs leading up to it, which are all, again, a lot of them are relatively simple and digestible. If you have a good, solid understanding of the first four volumes of Likutei Sikhes, which any kid should be able to understand, then you should have, if you know the first four volumes well, you shouldn't have a big problem. No. And they're in English. I mean, they're in, it's not like they're you know, you got to climb to the moon to, if you know them well, and you have them well, and you have them clear, this line, way of thinking that the Rebbe is bringing down, you can mamash take your sikhs to Maimarim. Sometimes you have to learn the language of Maimarim. The language is more difficult. But to Rebbe, you have the system of thinking.
You're saying the Rebbe stepped off the scene to allow.
What the Rebbe did was he withdrew. Okay, he withdrew some of the revelations, some of the giluyim, some of the overwhelming makifim that were blowing people away. He drew it back so that the Rebbe said, why? The Rebbe said, what's needed now? That all the things that were previously in the life of the Makif should now be in the life of the Pnimius.
The
Rebbe in Tazriya Mitzvah, the Rebbe says that the Mashiach is a Melech, Mashiach is a Rav. So if everything is already done and Mashiach should come, so what are we waiting for? The Rebbe said, so what is this time now? The Rebbe says that all the Nyanam that were previously in the life of Makif, of Melech, should now become in the life of the Pnimius. That's it. The Rebbe is saying, I brought it all down, it's all here, it's reality, it's everything is here. So now I'm giving you guys the time and the space to use it. So use it, live with it, make it happen.
Well, when you say the time and the space, you know, sometimes there's still pressures
that make it very difficult to find the time. You still have to pay tuition bills, and you still have to do all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's like, there are a lot of things I would love to do, but I mean,
So one second, so you're saying that that's true, that I was giving us time and the space, but he also left us with a Yetzirah. That's true.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that
there's... Did I ever say that any Jew, man, woman, and child, did I ever say a balabas? Look at the Sikh of Shemini Tarshan Al. There's every Jew, man, woman, child, a balabas, a balasek, and a Yeshiv Ayel, there's no difference. Can bring the Geula and can live the Geula reality. That's what I was saying. Shemini Tarshan Al. The whole point of the Sikh is that every single Jew, man, woman, child, balasek, Yeshiv Ayel, doesn't matter what you do for a living, it doesn't matter what you know, it doesn't matter what. Every Jew, man, woman, and child can be ready for Geula.
Well, you said it doesn't matter what you know. Obviously, if you don't know it, I mean, you were just saying before that the whole thing is spending the time learning the Sikhs and learning this.
Well,
All you have to do is
every piece of information that you know about Geula, okay? Start practicing. That's what you do.
How does that correspond to that, to the Igris? You never tied it back to the Igris.
I'm saying in my humble opinion, that ever went into the prison cell.
You're not saying that
and closed the door behind them.
You're not saying that was nostalgic, though.
Well, that's what I'm telling you, that ever went through the process of a stroke, that went through the process of a stalkus, that ever went through all those processes. However, unlike anybody else who ever went through those processes, the Rebbe has the key in his pocket.
Would you give me a few examples of things that we've learned here that are things that without taking an inordinate amount of time one could put into practice if one simply desired to do so?
Yeah. Doesn't take much. You have to want to do it.
Anything. So give me some concrete examples. What?
What do you mean what? Tell me something that we learned.
What are some of these things? That's why, I mean, the things that we learned about this is coming and that's coming, it's all fine, but you're making it sound like there are practical things that if we just make the decision, we can just do.
Tell me something that we learned.
The Rebbe said to start living like the Geula is already here in Pashtus.
Example. What else? Did the Rebbe give an example?
What does that mean?
The Rebbe said to live in a way that you're above the world, and yet in a way that you're totally going down to the lowest levels of the world and being involved.
That sounds very uplifting and inspiring. Did I ever give an example?
That's the same thing you could have said throughout Jewish history, though.
Did I ever give any examples?
But if you do it, you see different kinds of results. That's the difference.
Of all the cities that we left, did I give you any examples? What it means to start living like the final cool one? So what do you want? Everyone's interested in philosophy. Everyone wants to know the philosophy of Geula. And I could quote an example of what any of the things that the Rebbe said that you could do to start living like the Geula.
Start learning in Yonei Torah Geula Mashiach.
That the Rebbe says is a way of getting yourself to that point. But what could you do to actually practice that?
What do you mean, like in the store or, I mean,
I don't know. Did I ever mention any sukkahs, any examples? I don't know. Did I mention ever any examples? I don't know. Somebody mentioned it. Does anyone have any examples?
Sure. Your whole hanhaga is a way that you're bala boss.
Whole hanhaga. What does that mean?
You're not under the limitations of the temple of the world. And you're living in a way that you're Balabas. The world is completely ready for you.
Wow. I'll tell you, that's really great. Give me an example.
That when you go to work, you mentioned that, you're learning at work. You're doing things that aren't, according to business ethics, according to what they teach in the business school, they're not necessarily the most effective thing.
Practice.
Business practice, you said that that business will teach you to focus on the customer, never take your mind off, you know, the business 24 hours a day. And you've spoken about, no, you should go there and bring Kedusha, bring Elkus into that, say Tehillim, learn, talk, put on tefillin on people. Mamish, while you're supposed to be, you know, under the teva of business, so to speak.
Okay, so let's say that's the example that we're going to use. But what of those things that you listed so far requires some great spiritual upheaval or transformation? Why can any idiot do that?
Depends if you want to keep your job for one thing, you have to get your work done also.
I didn't say no.
Well, he said you're going to sit there saying Tillum all day. I mean,
you did say Tillum all day. I said, what we try to do is, and we do it all the time, and we, see, because we're great Chabad philosophers, so what we try to do is we try to mystify everything. Okay, because we're into Jewish mysticism. What we try to do is mystify everything. If anybody paid any attention and noticed that what's been going on for the last close to 50 years, that the Rebbe has been trying to demystify everything. You understand? Take everything that's mystical and bring it down to Maisa B'Po'al.
But you can't say that the Rebbe does not talk on general levels.
Of course
as well.
He does. Of course he does.
For example, the Sikh of Noach, right? He's talking about being Mamshech, the Shem Avaya, into the Shem Elkim.
Right. It gives you a very specific example.
And many
It gives you a very specific example. A very specific example. He tells you,
okay.
He describes the old way of doing tshuva, and he describes
three
the
levels,
new way of doing
three levels of tshuva.
And it gives you a very specific example on how to approach tshuva in the Sikh of Baruch Shnei.
Right.
Okay. Just do it. It is. What's the myth? Like, oh, you have to, like, mamish, shame Avaya and shame Elikim, and you have to do some kind of acrobatics because you have to, like, squeeze shame Avaya into shame Elikim. You have to get your plunger and, yeah. What do you have to do?
What do you mean? You're saying
the Rebbe says, you got to...
It's not a very lofty thing that Rebbe's talking about.
It is an awesomely lofty
raise
thing.
Raise yourself
but
up.
But the Rebbe gave us a handle on it, how to bring it into my Sibapai. It's exceedingly lofty. But the point is, the Rebbe says, as lofty as it is, I've brought it down to Elam Hazak Ashmi, and all you have to do is do it to make it happen. Do it, live it, be it.
So in all the sikhs,
you don't have to fly off into the seventh heaven in order to make it happen. I did that for you. I went there. I brought it back. It's down here now.
But in sikha after sikha, where the Rebbe is describing this one nekuda of
how we managed to make it. I see we had less two babies left.
Of bringing this level of Elokus, which is mamish, like infinite above Teva, to bring that into Teva, that is something that people have trouble relating to as something that is tremendous.
If you learn the Sira Pasha Shmini, the Rebbe spoke about that then also.
Right.
The
Sira Pasha
Shmini, the Rebbe says, and you know how you do that? The Rebbe says, there's this amazing thing, it's called a mitzvah. There's this, when you do a mitzvah, you do that. You bring infinite godliness into the finite world. That's an amazing concept that I would say.
Okay, so
that's
one example.
When you learn Torah, you know what happens when you learn Torah? Learn Torah. Bring infinite godliness.
But my understanding is that wants us to apply it to
everything. They're never saying like this. If you know what, if you pay attention to what you're doing, then you can relate to it.
It's fine. It's easy with Torah and mitzvahs.
Different from what's been going on.
When you have to go into your workplace and do it.
That's a different question, which we've only addressed 500,000 times. Maybe we'll get a chance to do it 500,001. But that's a different question. What's the difference than everywhere we've been doing thousands of years? But we're talking about here the concept of we're talking about another issue, demystifying the concept of squeezing the infinite into the finite. So they're ever saying like this. That's the reality, that when you do a mitzvah, you do that.
But when I'm doing a mitzvah, I'm just doing kedusha.
What I am making possible for you to do is that you can live with that reality. That was going on when Jews did Torah mitzvahs formed. What I am doing is in making it possible.
24 hours a day.
You could live with that reality 24 hours a day. What are some examples of the difference between the way Jews did Torah mitzvahs all the years? Okay, when you saw God, okay, with God's the higher godly reality, coming down into the lower physical reality, was not manifest. Okay, which is that if you went and you stood in a public place and you put on tefillin, okay, the odds were you were going to die. So even though you've drawn that infinite godliness into the finite world, you didn't see the world changing in any way. In fact, you didn't. There was no manifestation of that. You didn't relate to that as the actual reality. Like the actual reality said that if you put tefillin on here, you're dead. Okay, right? The great, unbelievable, awesome story of the Rebbe putting on tefillin in a train full of communists. Okay, and the unbelievable, awesome miracle that a bunch of guys stood and surrounded the Rebbe to make sure that no one harms him. Okay, that's a miracle. Why is that a miracle? Because everyone understands that anyone else who put tefillin on a train full of communists got his head split open, got thrown out onto the tracks. Okay, when communists would when Russians would realize that there was a Jew on the train, they would throw him out on the tracks and he'd get killed. That was normal standard operating procedure. So to someone to put on tefillin on the train, with a beard, and to put tefillin on the train, it was a guaranteed death sentence. Which the miracle was that a bunch of guys stood up to block him. That was an unbelievable miracle. Okay. The Rebbe says, so the Rebbe says, what I accomplished is, Geula means, that the fact that the godly reality dominates, enters into, and transforms the physical reality, becomes manifest. What does it mean it becomes manifest? It means that now you can not only go put tefillin on in the street yourself, but you can stop Jews and get them to put tefillin on, and not only can you stop Jews to get them to put tefillin on, but the guy who will pass by will be respectful of the fact that you're getting people to put tefillin on. In other words, you can live your daily life relating to the fact, okay, you could relate to the world in one of two ways. You could relate to the world the Gullus way, going to places like Manhattan and all these places and seeing them as places that oppose godliness and forces that are against godliness, and therefore you have to adjust.